afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen. We're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, July 29th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey there, Melody.
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, ¿qué pasa? ¿Cómo estás?
Sí, no, we don't do that. I'd rather talk French or Italian.
Oulay, never mind.
Sí. Anyway, or I should say we. Hey, gold today. I'll say yes to gold. Just heard a buzz. I'll say yes to gold today. Gold was up $20.60 at $1,829. And we had off the high of 1833, so a good day for gold. Silver was up 58 cents at $25.63. Platinum was down too, but it had a big day yesterday, 1,068. Palladium was up 18 at 2,732. The USDX today was down by 0.38 at 91.89. Crude oil was up $1.21, 73.60, 73 bucks and 60 cents. And the paper markets without fail. Oh, let's see. The Dow was up 153 points at 35,084. And the S&P was up 18 points at 4,419. The NASDAQ was up 15, 14,778. European markets were all positive. Asian markets were all positive. The bond markets, all positive. Everything's in the green. Everything is okay. I'm so happy. The U.S. 10-year, 1.27, up 0.008. So barely up, but everything was green across the board. A good day around the world. So what else could we ask for? So, you know, it is amazing. They came out with the second quarter GDP. And they're not pretty. But I think they are better than what I than they should be, but they're still not pretty. The economy rose at a disappointing 6.4% annualized rate in the quarter ending June 30th. And a sign that the U.S. may have escaped the shackles of the pandemic, but, you know, there's still a lot of work to do. Second quarter gain accelerated slightly stronger than the first. And while that would have been impressive before a year ago, the gain was 25% less than the economist's 8.4% consensus estimate. Declines in private inventory and residential investment, along with a slowed pace of federal government spending, held back gains. Well, they'll make up for it once these infrastructure bills get passed. Rising imports also were a factor. This is all according to the Commerce Department, and federal government spending is probably will also change after the 30th of this month, tomorrow. What say you, Dave?
Well, they're attributing this the overall increase increasing personal consumption expenditures, as well as non-residential fixed investment, gains in exports, as well as state and local government spending also helped to boost output. Now, we know the gain serves as a yardstick for how far the economy has come from shutdowns last year. At its worst, the economy collapsed over 31% in the second quarter last year and then bounced back 33% in the third quarter. In the years prior to the pandemic, the second quarter gain would have been the strongest since the third quarter of 2003. Now, output has remained low below its pre-pandemic level, still, the National Bureau of Economic Research, the NBER, as we talked about recently, inexplicably pronounced the recession that began in February last year to have ended 2 months later in April, making it the shortest recession on record. So however much of a joke that is, Melody, areas of the economy remain underwater, as the labor market in particular has struggled to get back any place close to what what resembles normal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I mean, some of these numbers are just a joke anymore. And I mean, it's just like, but we know this. This is what we talk about. They just lie. They just flat out lie and adjust to make things, make everything sound good and everyone all warm and fuzzy inside. And here's another note, how weekly jobless claims, they moved higher last week. Initial filings for unemployment insurance totaled 419,000. Ending July 17th, they were only estimating about 350. And it was actually 18,000 more than the upwardly revised 368,000 from the previous period. So this was the highest weekly count since May 15th. And, you know, and everybody's saying, you know, so how can we have the better economic numbers, you know, when you still have people out there that just aren't working? And yeah, I guess it comes from the trillions of dollars that was spent in stimulus, so that everybody could go out and spend their checks, just so, to keep the economy going. So that's what they need us for. They need us to, you know, take their money, work for those that do, and spend it. We must spend. I don't know, Dave. It's just, it's really kind of bizarre when you really think about it. But anyway, what else do you got to say about the unemployment?
Oh, well, you know, it's again, this irrational exuberance term that I think applies to right now. Just in terms of how the Wall Streeters in particular, regardless of what they do, whether they're traders, whether they're the big banks, whether they're the economists, generally, just, I mean, and part of it is just blatant manipulation of the markets and smaller investors. To view anything positive. Now, it may come down to the fact that they know more than anybody how these algorithmic computer programs of these huge investment houses react to any negative word that can send the markets spiraling downwards. And so they feel, out of necessity, out of self-preservation, that they've got to talk a good game. Unfortunately, it's a ruse. But it does keep the paper markets in particular propped up, particularly along with the trillions of dollars underpinning their markets, $1.2 trillion, you know, a month from the Fed. It's insane. And now, to use these labor market figures, or despite, you know, a week like this that we're reporting on right now, that somehow, despite that, I mean, this could go on for weeks at a time, and we'd still hear, but we're just around the corner from a tremendous build back. I don't know. It's discouraging. It's outrageous. It just makes an Alice in Wonderland make-believe world out there, Melody, that I think just continues to set the stage for the crashing through the clouds of the Black Swan, whatever it will be.
You know, I was talking to a client right before the program, and she was telling me that she got word, and there's a lot of notices going out to, I mean, I'm big clients, large clients, and so forth, and they were talking about, it was about the global supply chain and just how broken it is. And she said that, she says, well, a year ago or so, and when Trump was in office, and we talked about it on this program, where you had businesses leaving China and they were going to Vietnam. They were opening up a lot of business. I mean, Vietnam is booming. And so you have a lot of this manufacturing that moved to Vietnam. And supposedly Vietnam is being hit particularly hard. And now they're basically shutting down that country again. And so it's going to apply more pressure on the global supply chain that no one's have even mentioned yet or spoken about. And they're being told to hoard. A lot of these manufacturers and so forth are being told to hoard as much as they can, because they see such a severe shortage of items, materials. So you talk about inflation, you talk about rising prices, you see the, all of that coming together. Yeah. You tell me how so-called Powell and his statements yesterday is that he's going to start or he's closer to winding down their massive bond buying program. You know, he's talking about several more months. How about several more years?
Give me a break.
It's going to be several more years. If that, if we can ever get back to a normal, the only way we're going to get back to the normal is, yes, they are going to have to, they will default. They need that inflation. That's the only way they can survive. That'll be right before defaults, before government defaults. But, hey, they might default tomorrow or after tomorrow. They won't. They'll do something, but, you know, they're not going to put any, they're not going to do anything stupid to make it happen sooner than what they want it to happen. So, yeah, they'll do whatever they need to do for the debt ceiling. It might bring it, it might bring people some notice, and it should all be good for gold. So I would expect to see higher gold prices here, you know, I think from here on out, because I think things are going to just going to get pretty hairy to see the beginning of everything. So, yeah, as we mentioned yesterday when we talked about Powell and, you know, what they were saying and so forth, it's just like, you know, they can't stop their $120 billion a month quantitative easing program. They can't. They won't, and they can't. And they're just making it worse. They should have stopped it back in 2008 and let the system do what it had to do to fix itself. But nope. Look at the wealth that was created through 2008 until now. Look at all the bailouts, all the wealth, all on the back of taxpayers of this country. It's disgusting. Right, go ahead, Dave. It's sad. Go ahead, Dave.
Wow.
I promise. Go ahead.
Oh, that's fine. I really don't have anything else to say about
you know, and the thing of it is, you know, everybody's following what Powell says and why. Oh, you don't want to upset the equity markets. Oh, no. And to some degree, they're right. Because how many people have their retirement accounts in that equity market? How many trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars are sitting there? But they can only protect it for so long. And that's the problem.
Well, you just wait. Whenever, if I should say, because I'm not convinced that there will be a when, but if the Fed does start to back away from buying treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, you start to look at how many weeks of Friday closings we have with the major markets being down. And what that does to treasuries, the dollar will continue to, I think, to slide. If after a month of that slide in the paper markets, then it might not be a correction by that point. It could be, probably will be, probably happen pretty quickly once if tapering starts at a large pace and rate. Boy, I'm telling you, if you haven't upped your gold and silver holdings by then, you're going to miss out on, I think, what's going to be the gold rush of the 21st century. And I know that's coming out to the ledge. But boy, all signs point to that. Should it occur? And I think it turns out, I'm not going to say it when and that it will, but I don't see how it can't, Melody. Particularly with a prolonged period of even more modest growth than the 6% they're saying we saw last quarter. So again, if you don't make your moves to not just protect your holdings on the downside, but particularly for the next couple of years, you could miss out on the biggest thing in your lifetime.
You know, you're right about one thing. I don't like.
I know those. I'm not right about many. But
we don't know when. Anybody out there who calls dates and so forth, we don't know when. But we can certainly look at the news and what's happening around the world and the geopolitical situations and what's happening here and so forth. That does tell us. I mean, look, we came out of 2008. I think this will be worse than 2008. And what people don't seem to realize is we look at these stock market prices as being high, but what is your dollar buying you? We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody in the office taking care of a high volume of client orders. Please give her a call at 1-800-375-4188, 800-375-4188. Time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's topic about the filthy rich. Story about a woman named Heidi Wald, who was strolling down East Hampton's main beach one morning recently when something unusual caught her eye. She said, I looked down as I'm always looking for sea glass. She spent summers on the East End since she was six, and there was a perfectly crisp $50 bill on the shore. She thought, only in the Hamptons. Well, along with random 50s strewn across the beach have come the ultra-moneyed themselves, who flooded in numbers, many say, they've never seen before, leaving even the rich people thinking the rich people are ruining the Hamptons. There's so much money now, it's nauseating. There's one woman who bought her house in Amagansett in 1991. She said, I'm a one percenter, but I bear no resemblance to these people. She blames the pandemic for the new crowd and the 2017 tax cuts for making the wealthy even wealthier over the past few years. Everyone with money is here, she said. If I weren't here already, I wouldn't come now. The conspicuous consumption is just ugly. Now, after repeatedly passing by a house that belongs to one of those hedge fund guys and watching him have these enormous, fully grown trees planted day after day, she said she finally stopped to ask a dozen or so workers on site about the cost. They said they thought $50,000 to $75,000 a day. One worker said, I would suspect it's closer to $100,000. Jeez. Another long-time Hamptonite, Catherine Kellinger, said that while prices on the South Fork of Long Island are generally high, things of late have gotten ridiculous, pricing out younger people and others with less disposable income. Guess everything's relative, right? Kellinger and her husband Lee Hansen, who's the chef and co-owner of the famed Frenchette restaurant, first rented in the Hamptons back in 1998. They and three others each paid $1,500 for a huge Victorian on Meeting House Lane in Amagansett. She explained they were five late 20-something friends who rented year after year until we could buy, well, by Hampton standards, a reasonably priced house of our own. She added a freelance writer and a young cook just couldn't do that today. Kellinger said the level of judgment there, the astronomical costs have killed the relaxed vibe. It's so expensive, there's no more livability. It's all about tablescaping and costuming. I guess those are terms exclusive to places like the Hamptons. Another 25-year-old said she pooled her money with about 30 friends and friends of friends to get it to just rent a house in Montauk for a month. And her $3,000 contribution is nothing compared to what young people are spending at the clubs there. She said tables are absurd. Adding, I've had friends who've ended the night with $7,000 bar bills. She said one night she spent $60 on a one-mile Uber trip home. 1 mile. Another has a reported $600 plus rides for trips between two hamlets, blaming the price hike on increased demand from the so-called tourists. The same price hike appears to be showing up across the board. The more than $88 price tag on a lobster Cobb salad at the ultra-pricey Duryea's in Montauk seems to have broken the spirit of those willing to drop a regular person's mortgage payment on a single meal. One flinches at $150,000 for 1 month rental, a house that isn't even beachside. But food, mind you, is a touchy subject. One hot lunch spot in Bridgehampton left the group still hungry and a lot lighter in the wallet. Bill was $300 for four people, and they said they didn't even have any alcohol. One of the women of the four said this year's prices are much higher than last year's. We had two iced teas, Caesar salads with chicken, and some oysters. $300. Buy a lot of silver coins with that. Well, at least 10. A dozen. It's hard to blame the restaurants. I mean, after costly quarantine closures, some have had to remain closed for a couple of days a week because of staff shortages. With the rising cost of groceries now, many have just passed along their own price increases to customers. But it's easy to blame those who will pay any amount for anything. One local who said they've driven roughly an hour for dramatically cheaper groceries is worried that the new wave won't be satisfied with simply outspending the locals. Homes in the Hamptons range from $5 million to $150 million. She said, we're the main source of money that flows through the system out here, and why shouldn't more of us be public officials? Maybe not a bad idea. Well, pity not the 1%, ladies and gentlemen, especially the 1/10 of the 1%. They have so much silly money, walking around money, 10 or 15% more in taxes to pay for a new program or two that's essential to make this country better, in my humble opinion, is no skin whatsoever off their backs. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, load up now. Stories like that makes me think, whew, with the division in this country, particularly financially, things are going to get a lot uglier before they get pretty again. And that is this week's Levity is Golden. Now, quickly flying across the Atlantic, Eurozone economic sentiment hit a record high in July, according to a new report out today. But a drop in optimism among consumers and the slower rate of increase may signal that the peak is fast approaching. The EU's monthly survey showed that sentiment in the 19-country bloc rose to 119 points in July. That's a record since data began to be collected in 1985. Up from about 118 in June, which was already a 21-year high. However, as the positive impact of the reopening of economic activities begins to wane and fears grow around this Delta variant, sentiment has started growing at a slower pace. Compared to the last months, The latest improvement was much weaker, suggesting that the indicator is approaching its peak. That's according to the European Commission official statement, along with the release of its survey. Oh, we'll see what's going on. I suspect that's going to be widespread across the world as particularly as labor struggles continue. Now, in what seems to be now a daily back and forth, I guess this one falls under, well, what a difference another day or two makes, right? Probably heard that the Senate voted last evening to advance the bipartisan infrastructure plan, even without a text. And they're calling it a critical step toward passing this bipartisan plan. They voted 67 to 32 just to push the bill forward to floor debate in the Senate. 17 Republicans, all 50 Democrats voted yes for that. Now, again, the vote opens the infrastructure bill to debate and to offering amendments to the proposal, which right now would put $550 billion into transportation, broadband, and utilities. While senators who back the procedural motion could oppose a final package, the procedural vote bodes well for its chance of passage, at least to seasoned Washington observers. The deal came together earlier yesterday after negotiators resolved their disputes over transit and broadband funding, among other issues. And the plan was trimmed another $29 billion from the $579 in new spending. Many Democrats complained that sum's too small, even though, you know, there is a couple of other $100 billion of unspent pandemic relief money that is going to be thrown into that mix. Now, supporters of the bipartisan bill have hailed it as a needed investment that will boost the economy further. Democrats, however, still face a range of pitfalls as they try to get the bipartisan bill, and especially their separate $3.5 trillion spending package to the president's desk in the coming months. You know that Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader, is going to have to keep all 50 members of his caucus and get at least 10 of those 17 Republicans that voted yes yesterday on board to ensure that this plan passes. At the same time, I mean, House Speaker Pelosi could have as much, if not more, of a difficult time to win over her members, particularly her progressive wing, which is clamoring for many more dollars in the plan. Here's what we know about the compromise bill. This is according to a fact sheet from the White House. And it will change, undoubtedly, but it gives you, I think, the bulk, the crux, I should say, of where this plan's going. $110 billion in new funding for roads, bridges, and other major projects, including $40 billion for bridge repair and replacement. $11 billion toward reducing car crashes and fatalities. $39 billion to modernize public transit and improve access for people with disabilities. $66 billion to eliminate Amtrak's backlog of construction, to modernize trains and expand service. $15 billion for electric vehicle charging infrastructure, electric buses and transit. $1 billion put toward a program to reconnect communities divided by transportation infrastructure, like parts of the interstate highway system that were built through low-income neighborhoods. $17 billion toward port infrastructure, a big one, I think. $25 billion for airports, $50 billion for weatherization and protection against droughts and floods, $55 billion for clean drinking water, which includes replacing all of the country's lead pipes, $65 billion for broadband internet infrastructure, especially in rural areas of the country, $21 billion for cleaning up Superfund sites and the like, $73 billion to update power infrastructure. Now, that doesn't include the second separate $3.5 trillion plan that Democrats want to invest in child care, paid family leave, education, and the like. Every Democrat in the Senate will need to support that package to pass it without any Republican votes, should they use the budget reconciliation process, as it looks like will be the case. Now, already one Democrat, Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, said they want a smaller final reconciliation bill. And Sinema was the lead Democratic negotiator on the bipartisan bill. So that puts a wrinkle into that piece right now. Pelosi in the House has insisted that she won't bring the infrastructure bill or the reconciliation bill to the House floor until the Senate passes both of them. So, ladies and gentlemen, infrastructure is moving, but the plot thickens once again. Now, some market observers, Sam Rowe of Axios, who's one of them, say businesses are investing more in themselves these days, and as measured by core capital goods orders, that appears to be the case. I mean, orders for durable goods, non-aircraft or defense-related, are a mostly dependable proxy for business investment, has been for many years. And these equipment orders will get fulfilled in the months ahead, so they reflect businesses' expectations for the future. And continuing growth in this measure suggests the economic growth we're experiencing right now could continue, although certainly not anywhere close to the 6.5% in the second quarter, I believe. Capital core goods, or core capital goods, increased by 0.5% in June to $76.1 billion. That was up from $75.7 in May. Year over year, in June, that was a 17% increase. And with that music level increasing, it tells me we're out of time for the first segment. Stick around. We'll be back after these few important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Right before the break, I was talking about the durable good orders and how they'd increased 17% in June year over year. Normally, these mounting orders for new capital equipment do translate to higher growth. A lot of other factors at play this time around that makes watching future monthly orders, these reports, important to see if these core capital good orders continue to rise. Ian Shepherdson of Macroeconomics says companies in aggregate are cash rich, but they remain asset constrained after a decade of underinvestment following the Great Recession. So whether or not they're putting money where their mouths are, I think, in the long term, remains to be seen. But whether or not you believe economic activity has peaked, I mean, some businesses certainly do appear to be positioning themselves for more growth the old-fashioned way. If only so many of them wouldn't fake that positioning by investing so much into share buybacks. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. In any event, here's one that gets my gall. You really can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. A G30 working group that's chaired by former New York Fed President Tim Geithner released a report today calling for a standing repo program from the Fed that would be open to a broad range of market participation. Now, guess what? I think it was barely dry in that report when the Fed itself issued a press release saying it was doing just that. Now, this so-called standing repo facility, effectively meaning that it will be permanent until the Fed says it isn't, will be able to lend out $500 billion in overnight loans each day at below market interest rates. Below market, between 0.25%. If the $500 billion runs out, Fed Chair Jerome Powell has his discretion to increase it. More notably, the repo operations will be conducted by the open market desk of, yes, you guessed it, the New York Fed. And you know what that means. The names of the banks getting these loans will never see the light of day. Unless, that is, a media powerhouse decides to stand up for transparency and democracy and takes the Fed to court again. Geithner, supported by two other cringeworthy members of this working group, Larry Summers, who helped repeal the Glass-Steagall Acts so that too-big-to-fail Wall Street banks could hold trillions of dollars in risky derivatives, alongside trillions of dollars of taxpayer-supported deposits from moms and pops. And there's Bill Dudley, another former New York Fed president, whose wife collected $190,000 a year from J.P. Morgan Chase while it was supervised by the New York Fed. Unlike the Federal Reserve Board, the New York Fed isn't a public agency. It's privately owned by the too big to fails. It's important to remember. To spin the appearance that this isn't just another bailout of the trading units of the Franken banks, as Pam and Russ Martin like to call them. I mean, the banks comprise the so-called 23 primary dealers who are already approved counterparties for the Fed repo operations. The Fed announced that the standing repo facility, we'll just call it SRF, will be expanded to other financial institutions. The New York Fed clarified that as follows, quote, primary dealers will continue to be counterparties for repo operations under the SRF. The SRF counterparties will be expanded to include additional depository institutions. Initially, criteria will be established to effectively manage onboarding of interested institutions, consistent with the New York Fed's commitment to ensuring its counterparty policies promote a fair and competitive marketplace. These criteria will be adjusted over time to expand institution eligibility. And the initial criteria will allow depository institutions with holdings of treasury agency debt and agency mortgage-backed securities greater than $5 billion as of June 30th, or with total assets greater than $30 billion to express interest on October 1st. Unquote. Now, the Fed also announced that it's creating a new standing repo facility, for foreign and international monetary authorities. The New York Fed, again, explained that as follows. Under the, this one's called FIMA, F-I-M-A. Under the FIMA repo facility, the FOMC directed the desk, the trading desk of the New York Fed, to offer overnight repo transactions at a rate of 0.25% to foreign central bank and international accounts against their holdings of treasury securities maintained in the custody of the New York Fed, subject to a per counterparty limit of $60 million. That's like, are you kidding me? Now, the Martins believe the Fed is sensing some urgency to start these permanent new facilities right away. Huh? You think so? The domestic repo facility loaded with $500 billion will become effective tomorrow. What's next, ladies and gentlemen? Adding slots on the Fed board itself for foreign banks or countries? Whew. Okay, if it's all right with you, let's continue down the road of bashing too big to fail banks. By its own account, Too Big to Fail Credit Suisse Group, holding company of Credit Suisse Bank, failed to properly monitor tens of billions of dollars of exposure that piled up while handling trades for Archegos Capital Management that generated relatively little income. Bank's new internal report into how it lost about $5.5 billion tied to the collapse of Bill Hwang's family office paints a picture of due diligence failures as employees chased business that made little economic sense for the shareholders. Perhaps in terms of commissions, it made sense for, well, the traders, the investment bankers. But despite the report's crushing assessment of how Credit Suisse got burned when the hedge fund collapsed earlier this year, it doesn't allege any criminality inside the Swiss bank. I'm sure it would decide to let others, like the U.S. Justice Department, figure that one out, or the SEC, or one of the other regulators. The Swiss firm's prime brokerage unit, which deals with hedge fund clients, suffered steeper losses than any other competitor when Archegos's massive leveraged bets on a relatively small collection of companies soured earlier this year. And that ultimately pushed the lender to cut its dividend, pause buybacks, and in search of new capital. Poor things. The bank had allowed the family office to leverage the stock bets up to 10 times and only asked for collateral worth 10%. Of the sums borrowed. New Suisse board chair Antonio Horta Osorio pledged a thorough review, calling Archegos and the Greensill Capital scandal that preceded it worse than anything he'd lived through over 3.5 decades working at banks. The Archegos debacle prompted the exit of several Swiss Bank senior execs, including investment banking head Brian Chin, risk and compliance head Lara Warner, and both co-heads of the prime brokerage business. And while CEO Thomas Gottstein was spared, just like J.P. Morgan Chase's Jamie Dimon was, he since struggled to retain many of the firm's top investment bankers who have left over concerns that the scandals will dent their business and pay. What a joke! But that's the way it is in La La Land. When Credit Suisse announced that it's hiring Goldman Sachs Deputy Chief Risk Officer David Wildermuth to become its new risk head. He's going to join in February and report directly to Gottstein. Since Archegos, the bank said it's been reducing risk, including downsizing the prime brokerage business by a third and cutting ties with clients like hedge funds that are deemed high risk. Nothing like Monday morning quarterbacking, is there, ladies and gentlemen? Well, the bank has decided it will focus on customers that use the firm for more than just prime services. Well, how do you do? Only Japan's Nomura came anywhere close to sustaining the same level of damage as Credit Suisse, losing almost $3 billion. But the hit to Credit Suisse was all the worse because it came literally just weeks after the Greensill scandal. You'll recall we talked about this, that the bank was forced to liquidate $10 billion in supply chain finance funds that it ran with financier Lex Greensill. And clients of Zatset's management unit still don't know the magnitude of the losses to expect. After Greensill, Gottstein replaced asset management head Eric Varvel and removed the business from direct oversight of wealth management. Crazy, crazy goings on. Oh, my goodness. Just look at those piles of gold coins. In the mints waiting to be picked up by places like Discount Gold and Silver Trading to send on to you, our worthy clients. Keep yourself out of trouble, ladies and gentlemen. These banks, they really can't help themselves. And I think it's just a matter of time till some crisis compounding on top of these others I've just talked about are going to bring the whole thing crashing down again. And what it's going to do to the economy is, well, only anyone can guess. Now, a century ago, union organizers around the world would shout, "Workers of the world, unite!" Well, fast forward 100 years, American workers once again are increasingly optimistic about their options. As we've been talking about in this program, employers everywhere are scrambling to find workers as demand for goods and services continues to boom, largely. Many workers this time are aware of this, and they've begun to try leveraging their advantage into pay raises or better opportunities elsewhere. It's why they're roughly, what is it, 3 million? Or is it 300,000? I beg your pardon. More job vacancies than there are people looking for work right now. Even unemployed workers with financial cushions are opting to sit in the sidelines as they await more competitive pay. According to yesterday's Conference Board July Consumer Confidence Report, the net percentage of consumers saying jobs are plentiful climbed to a 21-year high of 44%+. Now, that comes from 55% of them saying jobs are plentiful, less a mere 10% that view jobs as hard to get. All of this is occurring as employment remains about 6.7 million jobs below their pre-pandemic levels. Now, to be clear, there are plenty out there who would like to work but are sitting out because of issues like childcare and the unemployment benefits that will run out after Labor Day. More importantly, the shortfall in U.S. employment is not for lack of demand. And some are saying that points to a rapid turnaround in the labor market in the coming months. At least that's what Renaissance macro research economist Neil Dutta said, referring to the conference board's data. Now, mainstream economists say to keep an eye on the next few confidence reports to see if this labor trend continues. More importantly than this confidence report, however, are the numbers themselves. And I don't think we're going to know at least until a few weeks after September 6th, when pandemic unemployment assistance ends, to start to see the spillover effect of what that does to unemployment levels and people returning back to work. Bottom line, in the meantime, I mean, workers seem to have a lot of leverage right now, perhaps even more so than they themselves realize, certainly as a group. But whether they're able to take advantage of this in any big way, well, that remains to be seen. Hey, that went quickly. We're all out of time. That's it for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday, Melody, tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog here. After the sun next rises. Thanks as always to producer and engineer Todd. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening. Have a good evening, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye.